flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis, and welcome to Podcast UFO for episode number 37. Today is Listener Sightings. Make sure you check out our new easy-to-join forum. That's on our website, which is podcastufo.com. If you need to contact me, that's martin@podcastufo.com. And now for this week's news with Michael Loke. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing good. How are you this week?
Great. What's up for the news this week?
Well, we have a couple of stories about some UFO-related film projects, more news about the Russian meteor, some real space news, and even more. So are you ready to get started?
Sure.
All right. First off this week, James Fox, the man behind the documentaries Out of the Blue and I Know What I Saw, who was recently featured in the National Geographic show Chasing UFOs, has a new film in the works titled 701. As a part of production, he is offering $100,000 for, and I quote directly from the 701 website, quote, the best proof that UFOs are real, parentheses, implying structured craft not manufactured from any known agency on Earth, close parentheses, close quotes. The proof needs to be able to be scientifically tested, but can be a still photograph, video footage, or even material. For more information on 701, the $100,000 offer, and James Fox, visit the official project website through the link in the show notes.
You know, I like James Fox. I really like Out of the Blue and I Know What I Saw in videos like that. But now, really, $100,000, you might as well offer $1 billion if you really want surefire proof, because nobody's been able to do that yet. What's your take on that, Michael?
He probably doesn't have $1 billion. I mean, at least it's a genuine offer. You know, if it was something like $10 million, it would wreak a little bit more of a publicity stunt. You know, this is the film still in production. This seems like a genuine offer, you know, and maybe it's enough to tip somebody who's, you know, maybe it's enough to make up for that government pension you'll lose by becoming a whistleblower.
I can see your point. So that'll be interesting if someone does come forward on that. I'm wondering if there's any way to track that, whether he does actually get someone before the film is actually developed.
You know, I'm really not sure. The film is in early stages right now, so the website has some information, but not a lot. I'm sure that's something that we can keep an eye on, and ultimately we can watch his new documentary and see if it shows up.
Right.
And in more documentary news, Sirius, the latest project from Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, will premiere on Earth Day, which is April 22nd, in L.A. The documentary focuses on proving that aliens have not only visited the Earth using faster-than-light drives and amazing energy technologies, but also that Earth has these systems, but they're suppressed by the power elite. Tickets are available online, and we have a link in the show notes.
So is this like an indie film that's just coming out in a couple of theaters right now, just in L.A.?
You know, I've always got the impression that it's going to pretty much be straight to DVD. You know, this is the kind of red carpet premiere, and then after that, I get his newsletters in my email and look over them, and I've always gotten the impression it's going to be straight to DVD. I would be shocked if it got any kind of major film distribution, just because there's not been a film, you know, distributor mentioned at this point, and without a known distributor, you know, the days of kind of shopping your movie around the country are long gone, unfortunately.
Well, it'll be interesting to see a lot of the key points, what he has to show in those, you know.
This movie has been in the works for a while. It's been being mentioned for quite some time on his website, so.
Right.
Last month's Russian meteorite is refusing to leave the headlines. According to a recent article on the Daily Mail website, Russian UFO researcher Alexander Komenev claims that something actually shot down the meteorite in the skies over the Ural Mountains. According to the article, he has received at least three different videos showing a small, ovular object hit the fireball. Also, it is alleged that there were several UFO sightings in the area before the event and none since the meteor's explosion. Check the link to the article in our show notes. You'll find the original Daily Mail article, which includes stills and video.
Well, you know, I'd like to think that UFOs are out there looking out for us, but I don't know. I have a hard time swallowing that one. And just a quick note here, Chris Lambright, I was speaking to him the other day, and former guest here on the show, and he was involved in some forum discussion about this, you know, made a comment more or less on the scientific side of possibly just the way the thing was breaking up and a reflection and all this. And someone, you know, called him out as a debunker and what is it, swamp gas, with all kinds of expletives. So he just had to bow out of the forum.
I like last week's story better, and I'm holding to it was a U.S. weapon because that makes me sleep better at night thinking we can shoot meteors out of the sky.
Yeah, that would be a really good foreign policy to do that over Russia, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, it's better than letting it hit them.
Yeah, but wouldn't we want to tell them?
Maybe, maybe not.
Even afterwards?
I don't know. We should have claimed credit for it either way, whether we did it or not.
You still can. Yeah. SpaceX did it.
That's right.
Yeah.
In fact, in another step towards the privatization of the final frontier, SpaceX Dragon capsule has again successfully docked with the International Space Station, this time despite a post-launch thruster problem. Elon Musk's SpaceX has been proving that the future of space exploration may no longer be in the hands of government agencies such as NASA. In related news, Dennis Tito, who was the world's first space tourist, has announced a proposal to send a married couple on a trip around Mars. It wouldn't actually land. It would just take a orbit or two around the planet and then come back. The mission feasibility study used SpaceX's Dragon capsule as the model. We have links to the space.com coverage of both stories, which includes video of the docking in the show notes.
So I understand that's over 500 days you know, for that round trip, and you would really have to get along. Can you imagine the type of screening they'd have to do for the couple?
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, 500 days without the kids sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, you'd really have to have a lot to stimulate your mind and hopefully not stimulate something where you'd there'd be a pregnancy involved somewhere around there. You could have the first space child. That'd be interesting.
Weren't the Russians trying to do that a few years ago?
I don't know. Were they going to name it Sputnik?
I don't know. I seem to remember seeing that somewhere, although I will admit it might have been in grocery store checkout headlines.
Oh, yeah.
I will look into that. I will post it on the forum if that was something they actually tried.
New meaning to the Mile High Club, I guess, huh?
No kidding. In more space news, a February 28th news conference at NASA announced that recent probes sent to measure the Van Allen radiation belt found that it is not the double ring previously believed, but in fact a triple ring of protection around the Earth. The crucial data was only captured because a group of scientists successfully lobbied for the Relativistic Electron-Proton Telescope to be activated ahead of schedule so its data would overlap with the end of another program. Read more and view the press briefing materials at the link to NASA you'll find in our show notes.
Is this good news for us somehow?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it doesn't affect us in the grand scheme of things. It's been there whether we know it or not. One thing it proves is that we sure have a lot to learn about inner space before we even begin to discuss outer space.
So, but it sounds like a layer of protection. Is that what you said?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. I feel better. I'm going to sleep better tonight.
Well, you have your radiation belt. I have my anti-meteor weapons.
Yeah, we're doing good.
Okay, for those in and around Texas, Friday, March 15th, we'll see the Out of This World Conference in Edinburgh, Texas. Running from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., conference highlights include presentations by Stanton Friedman, who just received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the International UFO Congress in Phoenix, Noe Torres, Travis Walton, and a special showing of Fire in the Sky, plus more. Tickets for the one-day event start at a reasonable $15, and you will find a link to more information on our website. Thanks to Kathleen Martin for passing along the news about Stan. She also tells us that the International UFO Congress proclaimed Grant Cameron Researcher of the Year. Kathleen is, of course, co-author of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, and Science Was Wrong with Stanton Friedman. She has a new book, The Alien Abduction Files, co-written with Denise Stoner, that is currently available for pre-order on Amazon.
Yeah, we have Denise Stoner's actually coming on this show in a little while. So that'll be good to hear her side since the book has been published.
Well, it's actually not published yet. It's on pre-order. I believe it comes out in May.
I see. Well, hopefully we'll have her on around that time. That makes sense.
And finally, Martin, you may have heard one or more of the theories arguing that Disney, and possibly Walt Disney himself, have been involved with the government plots concerning UFOs. A copy of the 1995 special Alien Encounters from New Tomorrowland, which was aired on the then brand new and now defunct network UPN, has turned up on YouTube. Hosted by Robert Urich, the special investigated the possibility of alien encounters while touting a new attraction that I believe never actually opened to the public. Do you remember this special at all, Martin?
Yes, I actually watched it since it's been on YouTube and recently. And who doesn't like me some Dan Tana, Robert Urich?
Yes, Spencer for Hire.
That's right. That's right. Now, that show, I want to point out that I don't think I've ever watched any show on UFOs that was so blatant, calling everything that was definitely an alien behind the wheel of that thing. And, you know, it's pretty strong convictions of everything being actual aliens.
It really caught me a bit off guard, too. I'm not used to something like that being from television. I've definitely seen some privately produced, you know, documentaries and video out there that are sure they have this entire thing licked and, you know exactly where the aliens are coming from and this. But for something that actually aired on a more or less major public network, I was a little bit shocked because there was no equivocation. There was also very little proof.
Right. The Bud Hopkins was in there. There was a couple of really good guests that they had in there chiming in. But they were always on the side that these are definitely aliens. And, I was kind of shocked by that. And
yeah, they definitively said Majestic 12 was real.
That's right.
It was just very kind of surprising.
And there were a couple of things that actually have been proven as hoaxes other than that they had in that show as well. It wasn't too well researched, I don't think, at the time for Disney.
No, it wasn't. It was but it was definitely very odd because you expect more from Disney, I would think.
I know. You know, but I still liked it. It was still very entertaining.
I did too. It really had a kind of old school unsolved mysteries flair to it.
Yeah.
I was waiting for Robert Stack to jump out at any moment and tell me about Kecksburg.
Yeah. So, Michael, we're going to – that's it for the news, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it for the news.
Okay, so we are going to get into a couple of listener sightings. Did you have one at one time? I saw that on our About Us page.
I believe in my bio I do mention that I have probably the world's lamest UFO sighting, yes.
Okay, well, why don't you chime in and tell us about it?
Well, this would have been sometime in 2001. I'm not sure of the exact date, but it was shortly before my first daughter, which my first child was born. And like a lot of people, I was finding that a bit overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And between that and the fact that sleeping with a like 8-month pregnant woman is incredibly difficult, I found myself on my couch in my living room. And I remember I had just turned off the Jeffersons, figuring that if anything was going to put me to sleep, it was like 3 a.m. I had to get up and go to work the next day at like 5:30, that it was going to be the Jeffersons, and it didn't work. And I turned it off, and I live in an old house. It's about 100 years old or so, and has a large coal fireplace in my living room with two windows high in the corners of that wall on each side. And the couch just happens to align perfectly with one of these windows. So I'm laying on the couch looking out this window into the dark summer sky over St. Louis, which is something I had been doing quite a bit at that time and was pretty familiar with, seeing, you know, various airplanes and helicopters fly by. And I saw a light far off, moving very fast, just straight across my field of vision. And I remember thinking, wow, that's moving pretty quickly. But we have an Air Force base not too far from St. Louis and such, so it didn't really throw me off. And right when it got to just past the center point of my window, it just suddenly went straight up. Wow. And out of my field. I got up and I got close to the window so I could see further up, and I went outside even, and it was just gone. It was one of those famous 90-degree turns, just right straight up.
You mean just immediately stopped and shot up?
It didn't even stop. It was just one smooth motion. It was moving up and or across and then up. And wow. That was it. And not any faster up than it was going across. It just happened to be closer to the top of my window. but that was enough to make me say, hey, you know what? I don't know of anything that can do that.
I heard swamp gas can do that.
Really? Yeah. Because I don't think there are any swamps in my neighborhood.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks so much for sharing that, Michael.
Yeah, I'm sorry that, you know, no aliens, no anything spectacular, but it is 100% of, you know, as unidentified a flying object as you can get.
I'll say. All right. Hey, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you next week. Have a good week.
Thank you. Okay, I'm on Skype with Marcus Hamill and Tyler Patra. How you doing, guys?
Good, how are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for having us on.
Sure. Now, the reason you're on is I was actually on your show. It's called The After Hours Show, and that's on once a week. That's a live internet radio show. Is that right?
Yes, it's every Saturday, and we do it live.
And what's the time, and where can someone find the show?
Yeah, the best way to check us out is on our website. It's www.theafterhourshow.com. And every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern time, we go live. And we enjoy talking to our listeners, too. So if anyone wants to check that out, we'd appreciate it.
Yep. Now, I was on your show because you wanted to talk to me about a UFO sighting. So I, in turn, inviting you on. I want you to tell our listener audience, basically, it was both of you guys. You were hanging out at a campfire. Can you go ahead and talk about that whole situation?
Yeah, what we were doing was, this was kind of, I don't know, Tyler, would you say the late fall?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
And we enjoy having campfires, and oftentimes we'll sit there and just look up at the sky. And so this was late at night, and we were sitting around a fire, and jokingly, Tyler said he saw a plane flying over our heads, and he jokingly said, oh, look, a UFO. And so we laughed about that. But then as we were looking at the plane, we saw what looked like a star, kind of like the, we'll say the North Star. It was like the brightest star you've ever seen. And it came in really fast up in the sky towards the plane, stopped, and then backed up a little, and then kind of zigzagged off across the sky. And we watched this for about 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, it was long enough where we tried to call someone else out to see it, but they got out right as it was, you know, going out of our view. And it zigzagged off, and then it went off really fast into the sky and kind of just faded out.
Now, when you were seeing this, was there a time you were wondering if the people in the plane might have actually seen it?
I was actually wondering that, and I was actually keeping my eye on the news, too, to see if anything else, you know, would pop up or anything. And it was just small enough where it easily go unnoticed. Mm-hmm. The only reason we saw it was because we were looking up at the sky at the right time. But I'm sure the people on the plane saw it. They had to have.
Yeah, it was right next to it. I mean,
yeah.
Looking out the window, doing the same thing we're doing. And you know, yeah. Hey, what is that?
You must have known immediately it was something other than the norm.
Yeah, we got all excited, and we were just like, we got up out of our chairs and kind of just walked so we could keep seeing it as it was going off in the distance. But we never thought to record it. We both had our phones on us, and it just, we were too excited about seeing it.
Yeah, that happens. Now, when you were actually seeing this, can you describe exactly what it was that you saw?
Sure. The best way to describe it to someone who didn't see what we saw was a star. It was a really bright light, didn't have any distinct shape. It was more of kind of... I want to say orb, but it wasn't an orb. It was just kind of like a star that was moving around. Kind of resembled a shooting star, except for it was in the sky for a couple minutes at least.
Yeah, it didn't shoot down. It was just staying there and, you know.
Yeah, it didn't zigzagging and all that.
Yeah, the zigzagging is, that's not exactly what anything we know would exactly do, especially something that would stop that was in high altitude, what sounds like high altitude. Would you say it was about the size of a star, too?
What? Maybe a little bit bigger?
Yeah, I'd say a little bigger. Yeah. A little brighter.
Yeah.
Mm. Did you think, too, when this happened, did you think you were going to report it?
To be honest, I had no intention of ever reporting it. It was kind of a cool thing that happened.
Yeah.
But I don't think... I mean, I don't know about you, Tyler, but in my mind, I thought it was cool and I took it for what it was.
Yeah, same here. I was like, oh, nice.
But it did open my eyes because I think we talked about this when you were on our show a little bit, but I never really cared too much about UFOs. Like, I have no problem believing in stuff like that because the universe is, like, infinite. But I never really, you know, went out UFO watching or did any of this stuff. And seeing that almost kind of like made me want to go out and look at the stars more.
Yeah, yeah. I've had a similar experience myself, and I totally understand. What do you feel the same way, Tyler?
Right, yeah. I mean, I was always a believer in something above, but, you know, that just made it, you know, easier for me to realize, oh, wow, it's closer than what I think, you know?
Yeah.
What you both said about, or what you said, Marcus, about not reporting it, You got to keep in mind that you are probably the norm, and with that being said, there's somewhere around 10,000 reports of UFOs a year. So you think of it's just a small percentage of the people that actually report it. I'm sure there's a lot more that people are seeing out there. And I always think of it like this, and I don't know if anyone else out there ever thinks of this, but how many times is something happening when there are no eyes on the sky? Mm-hmm. You know, that's something to contemplate.
That's true. And if it was something that I could clearly see as a UFO, like let's say I saw a saucer, I would probably, I think I'd be more likely to film that too, first of all. And I would also be more likely to report it because someone else probably had to have seen it.
Yeah. So did you talk about this between the two of you, and did you tell your friends about this?
We did. We talked about it. Because we were all excited, actually. Even after that, I think we got on our phones and downloaded, like, apps to look at the stars and stuff.
Yeah. We stayed out there for a little longer just looking, seeing what we could find.
Yeah. And I think we did share the story. And actually, oddly enough, once we told one of our friends this about what happened and what we saw, they weren't surprised. They said, yeah, we actually saw something similar to that when we were out on your deck. And I was like, oh, really?
Now, where was this location?
We're in New Hampshire, and the location is right by, I want to say the touristy area in the Lakes region. Meredith and stuff.
Oh, yeah, toward Lake Winnipesaukee, up that area.
Yeah, we're right off the Interstate 93.
Mm-hmm. If you were going to try to explain this in a natural phenomenon, would you try to guess what else it could have been besides a UFO?
I can think of a number of things that it could have been towards the end of when we saw it. But the whole beginning really kind of confuses me because it flew in one direction towards the plane and then flew back the other direction after kind of like hovering there for a second and then zigzagged off. Now, normally, if I just saw the end of what we saw where it kind of faded out in the distance, I'd just say, oh, a shooting star or something like that.
Yeah.
It's honestly, that's really what it looked like 100%, except for the motion.
Right. Well, guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And sharing your experience.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
John Tackett, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Good, good. And thank you for actually responding when I reached out looking for listeners that actually had a sighting. So I want to, is this what got you interested in, and I know you listened to the show, is this what got you interested in the first place, listening to the podcast UFO?
Yes, I've basically tried to access any kind of data I can get my hands on from the beginning, you know, since I was a little kid, since this occurred at a really early age. So, yeah, and I found your podcast, and I actually found your podcast on the second episode.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm flattered. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Yeah.
It's an awesome podcast.
Well, thanks. Can you go into what your experience is?
It happened when I was like 8 years old. I was on the playground. I was in Phoenix, Arizona. I was just playing. I was, you know, and I looked up in the sky and I saw this thing that resembled the Lost in Space craft to a degree, like a silver disc.
Mm.
And I saw it like right above me, and it hovered and it stayed there for a few minutes. It was a few minutes, and I was just couldn't quit looking at it. Because you don't see that every day. Now, I mean, I saw so many airplanes flying over my head because I was back, you know, right towards the end of the Vietnam era. And there was a lot of helicopters flying over Phoenix, Arizona right then. I saw about every kind of aircraft you could possibly see as a little kid that existed at that point that
now,
flew overhead.
Were you out there with other children as well?
Yeah, there was. And I hollered at it. I hollered at my other friends at that time, and I tried to get the teacher's attention. And then I looked up, and the craft completely went to the other side of the hemisphere in like a few seconds, and it was absolutely incredible. There's nothing I've ever seen in my entire life go that fast.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was it. I mean, I was like, what could I do? I told my mom about it. She, you know, she gave me that look.
Yeah. When you're 8 years old and your imagination runs wild, but still. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that very vividly. I was like, that thing took off so quick. And then I started researching. Even as a little kid, I started watching any program I could possibly see on airplanes. Got me fascinated with, you know, aviation.
Wow.
And then I started researching different aspects of every type of plane possible that could have, you know, duplicated that example. That was no balloon.
Now, that can move like that. Were you scared?
No, I think I was more. No, I wasn't scared at all. I was actually more intrigued. Because, you know, I'd say a little kid would probably be more apt to approach an alien spacecraft than an adult, I would think, kind of, out of curiosity, because, you know, kids are really curious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember that very vividly.
Now, were you frustrated because you were the only one that saw it at the time?
Yes, I was very frustrated because I ran over all my little friends and nobody, it happened over like, I'd say a couple minutes. And what happened was when you see something like that, you know, floating right above you, you kind of get transfixed and you get so into what you're looking at, you don't think about trying to say, hey, why don't you look?
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of people say a very similar thing to what you just said.
Yeah.
If you had to describe the size of it, like how far away from you it was, would you say it was like holding a silver dollar over your head, or was it larger than that? Was it closer? About a quarter, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And it was silvery, and did it make any noise at all?
No.
Yeah.
No noise. It was the equivalent of like a balloon.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a balloon because I saw it move.
Right, right. I think that's, you know, that's the thing that I had when I had a sighting. It was actually kind of similar to yours. But when I had the sighting I had no idea that other people were reporting that they were making no noise. I had not a clue about that.
I didn't either. I actually, until later on, I didn't even know what the concept of a UFO was. I was 8 years old.
Ah, wow.
Yeah. I didn't know what the concept was. I tried to explain it to my mom, and she kind of shirked it off.
Yeah. Now, have you ever talked to your mother again about it?
Yes. Yes, I brought it up, and she remembers me mentioning to her, but she don't remember any details I told her because she said, I'm tired. I was tired when I got home from work, and you always had a unique story to tell. So I don't think she remembers all my unique stories. But one thing about it, I like when I wrote you on Facebook, I gave you an explanation. I do have a unique visual memory.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of unique because I, like I said, when I was 8 years old, you know, rode my bike around, you know, Phoenix, Arizona, left there when I was 12, went back when I was 38 to pick my mom up to drive her back because, you know, she lived there for a while and I, you know, her car was there, so I had to drive her back. Well, during that period of time I was there, she tried, you know, before I went back there, she tried to relocate the house I grew up in.
Hmm.
And she could not relocate it. And just through visualization on landmarks, at 38, I was able to go right to it, and I found it.
Wow.
The house I grew up in.
Yeah. Now, would you say that this sighting changed your life in a lot of ways?
Yes, because it made me absolutely believe there is something beyond, that something that's not man-made visiting us.
I agree. And how about your friends? Do you bring it up to your friends?
Not a lot.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. Yeah, specific ones. Like the one I told you about, I kind of talked to him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one, yeah, might have had a little more intense scenario than I did. That's for sure. I just basically saw something, but I know for a fact I saw it, and I remember it very vividly. And my mom remembers me talking to her about it, so it's not like it was an imagination thing, you know, in my book.
There was this real fascinating case in the 1960s in Australia on a school playground with a landing. Have you ever heard about that?
Where was it at?
This was in Australia.
No, I never did hear about that.
And by the way, Australia is the third most listened to a country to this podcast. And
oh, wow.
I have some connections to some people I'm going to be talking to down there eventually. But yes, it was a very, very vivid sighting by teachers and students. And then it took off. And there's still controversy about it after all this time. Still, it's almost like a mini Roswell. They're a Roswell in a way.
Wow. Yeah, I never heard about the Australia incident.
Since I had the sighting I had, and it was a very short time ago, actually, in 2006, I'm wow. always looking up at the sky, whether it's day or night. When I'm driving, you know, it's really changed what I do. Do you find yourself doing that?
Always. Ever since that happened, I actually got fascinated by astronomy.
Yeah.
And I started getting some programs, some software that orientated towards, you know, star charts, so you know what you're looking at when you look in the sky. Just kind of fascinating.
Right. Yeah, I have all that myself as well. Well, this is great. Anything else you'd like to say?
I'd say I really appreciate your podcast, and I like the route you're taking towards a more scientific approach. And I'm thinking, hopefully, within our lifetime, we're going to nail this down, and we're going to know what's going on.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd sure like to see that happen myself. Well, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
It's been great talking to you, too.
All right. So that's it for the show today. Thank you for listening. And do remember to check out our forum. Our website is podcastufo.com. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This was not my first space flight. Previous assignments for my newspaper had sent me to the moon many times, but never into the vast reaches of deep space.
What's the matter, Sonny? Are you scared?
Scared.
Sonny.